Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top? And how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. There's agents, there's listing agents, there's buyer's agents. But what if I told you that there is one specific buyer's agent who did over 250 buy-side deals on her own with the help of a showing assistant in 1 year? I believe that she's one of, if not the, best buyer's agents in the entire industry. She also happens to be a mega team owner and was the president of MAPS Coaching. Friends, I am talking about none other than Jen Davis. She has always been an inspiration to me, and she is about to break down for you all things buyers, and if you own a real estate team, how to get the most out of the buyer's agent role. Friends, sit back. Buckle up. This is Jen Davis. And today I am joined by Jen Davis. Jen, how are you?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
I am fantastic. So I'm your biggest fan. Everybody knows it. Now, we could start with these amazing things. We could say president of MAPS at KW. We could say 200 plus buyer side units on your own. We could say mega agent. We could say it all. But no one starts that way. I want to go back in time to when you weren't as successful. Jen, how did you find the greatest industry in the world?
I think like everybody else does, right? As a second option. I graduated from college. I had my first round of a couple of jobs. The first one being at Bass Pro Shops corporate office is in Springfield, Missouri. And I was an inventory specialist, which meant I sat in a cubicle and talked to no one and cried in my coffee most mornings. And my husband at the time said to me, "Hey, Jen, what about getting into real estate? I think that you would be good at it." And we were buying investment properties. And so the thought was about getting into real estate was, what if I just represented us? What if I helped us build our investment portfolio? And that was the initial thought process of, let's jump into real estate. And so that was it. I mean, it was just, I'll get my license and then we'll see where it goes from here.
So what happens next? You get the license. Are you just an instant success and there's investment deals falling off of trees? Did you instruct the agricultural department to plant the money tree on that day?
That was me. Yes. So I got my license. I didn't know what to do. And so I went to the closest brokerage and I walked in and I asked if I could have an interview. And they laughed and they said, "You really don't have to interview to be here. Just you can, we'll take your license." So I didn't join KW first. I went to a different company first. And no, nothing fell out of the trees. I had no idea what I was doing. One of my friends wanted to buy a house. I helped them. The first contract I turned into our compliance department actually had no signatures on it. I gave them the rough draft. So they called me back in. They said, "Hey, you might give us the one that's executed." So I was there for about 4 years and I started off, you know, probably 3, 4, 5 deals a year, really not successful to begin with. A guy there asked me to be his transaction coordinator. And turns out I was worse at that than I was at sitting in the cubicle at Bass Pro Shops because I really don't have a high level of detail. And very quickly, we decided that I'd be his buyer's agent. And so I was his buyer's agent for 3 years.
Let me ask you about that, because you bring up an interesting term, buyer's agent. So we have listeners from all different industries that tune in. And so there was a movement, and to some extent still is, where you would have these teams that would have specialization. One type of agent would specialize on working with buyers. Another type might specialize on working with sellers. Someone might specialize on just showing homes. Were you drawn to the buyer side of the business, or did you end up there by default?
I was drawn to the buyer side. I liked the story. I love people. I think you and I have talked about it, you know, over the course of the time that we've been friends, which is I genuinely like people's story. I like to know where they come from. I like to know why it is they're buying. And so very much drawn to the buyer side. And the gentleman that I was working with was looking for some different leverage. He started off needing an admin. And then when that didn't really work for me, he said, hey, let's try this. Biggest year there, I closed 16 transactions. And honestly, I don't know that I ever would have made the move, but he got very sick. He was mid-40s, was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And I had just had my second baby. And I was on maternity leave when he got diagnosed. And he called and he said, I need your help.
Wait, maternity leave for a real estate agent means you just don't get paid, right?
Just don't get paid. Yep. I finished out the files and then I was going to take some time off. And he called and had this really traumatic thing happen that nobody saw coming. You know, I look at how old I am now and that's how old he was when he was diagnosed. And
well, you're 38 in perpetuity as far as we're concerned.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Jason. Thanks. So I came back to help him and he passed about a year later. And in that time, what I recognized was he was the whole business. He was a great guy, a great human. I am still very close with his kids. His daughter was my nanny for a long time. And what I realized during that phase was that whole business was built on what he did. And about that time, I was introduced to Dan Holt, who you also know, love, and like to make fun of. And I was introduced to him by a builder in our area. And the builder said, hey, Jen's got this going on, right? This person that she was working with is not well, is likely not to make it. Dan was looking to add to his team and started recruiting me. And to be recruited is an interesting time as a real estate agent, because it doesn't happen very often. And I really wasn't closing that many deals. I was 16 units a year. I was working part-time with 2 kids. And when Dan reached out, he called and he had this big idea that I was going to come on as his buyer's agent. And I was going to close 50 homes in the first year that I was there. Yet the thing was, is he had a business plan and I had never seen one. I had been in real estate for 5 years. I was in the lead receiving habit. Somebody called the gentleman that I worked with. He passed them off if they were a buyer. He kept them if they were a seller. And Dan actually was the first person that sat down with me and said, here's how many calls you would need to make. Here's how many appointments you would need to go on. Here's what that might look like for you. And if you'll do these things, you can close 50 transactions. And it took about, 6 months to a year before I said yes, and then made the move to KW.
And then how many transactions did you close that first year? Did you get to the 50?
49. Right? Like, wouldn't the story have been better if I could have said yes?
Okay, so you do 49 deals. What's the one thing you learned that year?
It was really messy. That year was the year of no leverage. It was grit. It was, I'm waking up in the morning and I'm handling lead flow.
That's not what you learned. That's what it was. What's the one thing you learned that year?
What I learned was I could do anything that I want to do.
That's it. And that's so powerful. I was talking to Tiffany Fikes the other day. If you haven't heard her show, please go listen. And she says that the first step to achieving is believing that you can. And I know that sounds cliche, like it should be some meme on the Insta or on MySpace, but it literally begins and ends there. Because if you're unwilling or unable to get to that point, the actions don't follow, Jen.
I think that's right, Jason. You know, people will say stuff to me like, I want to do that or I want to be that. And I think to myself, do you? Because you want to do what I did. You want to have what I have, but you may not want to do what I did. And I think that first year, if I really look back and think about it, it's I learned how to trust myself. I learned how that I knew how to follow through. And so when I say that I learned I could do anything that I wanted to do, I finally understood the difference between a goal and a commitment.
That makes perfect sense to me. So the world continues to evolve. The business continues to expand. You do how many units by yourself, by your side, in your busiest year?
Before I had showing agents?
Yes.
110.
Oh, 110. And then once you had showing agents, what was your number?
225, 3 years in a row, 240 the year before I moved into the CEO role for Holt Homes Group.
Okay. So I just, everybody just take a pause. Don't like veer off the road, but just realize there's very few buyer's agents in the history of the game that have ever done anything like that. Jen, I'm going to ask you now here, if you're out there and you're driving, I'm going to take all the notes. You don't have to write anything down. I'm going to do all the work. If you want the notes, you go to MREANotes.com and join the tens of thousands of other real estate agents that are getting the notes. MREANotes.com. Now, Jen, in order to do 225 buy sides, whether you have showing agents or not, and in that case you did, number one, you need to have enough leads. Number two, you have to have some models and systems. Walk me through it. Tell me exactly how you did it.
So the progression was we led with leads. So I never made a hire thinking I'm going to bring this person on because I need more leads. What I did was I looked up and I said, I'm going to create enough leads that I have to have help. So if you look at the MREA and you just simply put it onto the buy side, I was the rainmaker for the buyer side of our business. I was 50% of our production. So the first hire was an admin. We took all the non-dollar producing activities off the plate, right? They were scheduling my showings. They were scheduling all the things that our amazing admin teams do. Then I looked up and the struggle was, you know, people talk about the 80-20 rule, right? Being in your 20%. I think what we miss sometimes is that your 20% evolves as you grow. And so what was happening is we were looking up year over year and saying, we need some additional help. And I'm going to get to the tactical. So we had admin first, and then I had someone that helped me with the pipeline as a buyer's agent. So what happens with a buyer agent is they get into the ebbs and flows, right? It's, I'm going to have 10 closings this month, and I'm going to have zero next month because I'm so busy servicing the business, I'm not lead generating, or I'm not moving things forward. So we were really dialed into what my 20% was. So I kept all of my top buyers. The nurturers that went to the ISA were those buyers that were 30 days plus. Something had to happen. They had a house to sell, credit repairs, something had to happen.
And I got to ask though, and I'm going to keep you going linear, so I'm going to force the conversation. Okay. How do you have enough top line leads to do that many bottom funnel leads? What was churning out all these people that said, hey, Jen, I want to buy a house?
Well, first of all, listings, right? Listings bring buyers. So we always had a big inventory. 20% of my business at that time were sign calls. So I still took the sign calls. It took a long time for me to leverage those off. The rest of them were past clients' database. And then we looked at internet leads. So, you know, we talked about it this week at Gary's Mastermind. About a third of the business that you want to do in a month will be created in the month that you're in. So you have to think by the time I was doing 110 or 225 units, I had built this massive machine of leads. So those leads came from sign calls, they came from internet leads, they came from past clients and Sphere. The difference between me and an average agent is we would capture the leads and we would follow up with them until they either purchased with us or filed a restraining order. So there was never the drop ball. You know, we were putting 20 to 30 properties under contract a month just on the buy side. Some of those leads were from 3 years ago. So I never had the, that's not a good lead. It may not have been a right now lead, but it was still a good lead that I could follow up with.
So the lesson here is that if a third of the people that I talk to become buyers in that month, if I want to do 10 deals on a monthly basis, I'm going to need to talk to 30 credible home buyers. 10 of them are going to become now clients. 20 of them are going to go into my nurture system, and they're the ones that start showing up in the future. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. How it starts, though, because someone out here is going to listen, they're going to be like, I can't meet with 30 people. What it starts with, though, is I want to put 3 people under contract. So I'm going to meet with 9. And so then those 6 go up on a follow-up plan. And then the next month, I'm going to meet with 9. So it's gradual and then it's sudden. It's compound interest. It's those types of things. It's having the ability to play the long game. I never thought I'm going to have one great year. I was bound and determined that I was going to be the best buyer's agent that there ever had been inside of Keller Williams. And I was unapologetic about it. When we looked at it, I treated a buyer agency agreement like you would have treated a listing agreement. I got them signed and I knew what month that buyer would transact in. So Jason, if you and I met and you weren't going to buy until January of next year, that's cool. I knew that. I would have you sign the buyer agency agreement for a year past the time we were going to look, but I had a follow-up plan of when am I going to start connecting with Jason again? What if his motivation changes? So in every month, I had a pipeline that was already there. I wasn't starting every month at zero. I didn't have to hunt and gather in the same month that I needed them to transact because I had a pool of buyers I was already going to be working with.
I totally get it. This makes perfect sense. So now I have the leads coming in. I'm pulling off the now business from it. Uh-huh. It sounds like bulletproofing my follow-up on the rest of those people is the next most important piece.
Always is. You know, there's that old saying of fortune is in the follow-up. I think what happens is we forget people. They go into a database or they go into a CRM or they go into a notebook and they're forgotten about. The actual really understanding someone's timeline and motivation, really making the connection with them and understanding when it is to transact, it gave you your follow-up plan. I never heard I'm not going to buy until next January and then only met with them for half the time I would meet with a right now buyer. I still did the full strategy session. I still met with them because what it gave me was insight. It built more than just rapport. It was stickiness. And what would happen is I made the pass back then to whoever was going to nurture the relationship. So I would say, you know, okay, Jason, this is awesome. I'm so excited that we're going to start looking, you know, right around the holidays and you're going to be in your new home next January. Here's what that's going to look like. It doesn't make sense for you and I to go look at properties right now because those properties are not still going to be available in November and December. So what I'd like to do is have Tyler, who's on my team, just kind of keep in contact with you, make sure that you understand what's going on in the market, what changes are happening, how often do you want to be communicated with. All I'm doing is getting a pulse for you and what's important to you. And then I'm having the time. I'm cutting it in half. If you say January, I'm thinking, okay, really September or October, which means Tyler's following up pretty consistently. And about every 30 days, I'm going to connect with you.
Love that. Okay. I got the leads. I've pulled off the cream. I'm following up with everybody else based on when they're going to do business. I'm changing my frequency and intensity. What's next?
If you look at it, then you look at the strategy session, right? If you've got your follow-up, you've got your strategy session, you're getting your agreement.
Well, wait a second. Because you just say it's the strategy session. What is a strategy session? Is this formally known as buyer's presentation?
Yeah, formally buyer consult, right? So the strategy session idea came when we looked at it and we said, how are we going to be proactive? I don't want to be the agent that someone texts something from Zillow and says, hey, Jen, I want to go take a look at this. The number one miss that a buyer agent has is they miss the expectation in the strategy session. And so what happens is they're tired, right? If you see a buyer agent right now, give them a hug. They've had a rough go over the last couple of years. And I think what the number one way that a buyer agent can take control of their business and actually run it like a business is by doing buyer presentations, strategy sessions, getting agreements signed, and being a professional.
You know, when I listen to Jen, what I hear is she's simply saying, be a professional. That's a sentence. Be a professional, period. You can't even go on about it because the clarity that she's bringing to the buyers and explaining the process to them and culminating in them understanding what the market conditions are, what they're looking for, what they can expect, how she gets paid, all of these things is what makes this a strategy session, to use her words. There's a difference between talking and consulting. And so close your eyes, don't close your eyes, you're driving, but just think for a second. If you had this plotted on an X and Y axis, in the bottom left-hand corner, you might have talking. In the upper right-hand corner, you would have consulting. Across the bottom, you'd have the word value. Because the truth of the matter is, a consulting conversation is wildly more valuable than just talking. What's the difference? The difference is, the person doing the consulting has an idea of what information they need to pull out of the person they're talking to. They need to collect enough raw ingredients such that they can get a picture of what this person is trying to build and then be able to propose multiple ways to move forward. That's consulting. Remember, Jen isn't tied to whether they buy a house or not. She's not even tied to whether they use her to do it or not. Jen is tied to the ultimate goal of every single real estate agent, which is help people make the best decision possible. And the only way to do that is to take a consultative approach with a fiduciary mindset. That's the highest and best calling. So in this confidential buyer strategy session, Jen, break this down for me. What are the major components?
Major components are, you know, a buyer is going to come in. You're going to do some rapport building.
Okay, stop right there. When you say they're going to come in, are you saying if they said to you, hey, let's just meet at a house, by the way, great to meet you over the phone, are you saying I'm not doing that? I'll meet you at the office?
We're meeting at the office. I would do it on Zoom, but we're meeting face to face. I want to see body language. I want them to talk to me. I want them to see the difference between me and the person that will jump out and run.
Got it. Okay, so we're meeting at the office. So we have a professional atmosphere. Okay. Then what are the key components past that?
So, you know, it is a skill level to get people to come in the office. So that is something as you're practicing, right? As you're doing your role plays, as you're doing your dialogues, is understanding the confidence that you have to have of the value you're going to provide when somebody comes to the office. They come in, we sit down, we do some rapport building, and then we're jumping into it. I'm going to say, you know, Jason, what do you know about the market? And I'm going to stop. And I'm just going to listen. And you're going to tell me what you know about the market. And two things are going to happen. I'm either going to validate what you've just said, or I'm going to educate you. And by educate, I don't mean I'm going to show off and I'm going to tell you all my stats and how amazing I am and all these things. I'm going to tell you between story and statistic what's happening in the market based on your personality. So I'm going to give you both so that you can see, oh, here's what's going on in the market. Because if I don't, and the market is moving as quickly as it has over the last few years, and we get into a space where you love a house and you want to make an offer, and I say, awesome, you're going to have to offer $100,000 over starting price. You're going to be like, what are you talking about? Right? So that part starts in the strategy session, is understanding that the perfect offer starts there. Because that's when we're building that relationship, and it's when we're building your confidence in me to be your advocate.
It's kind of coming together with me in that I'm having a professional meeting because I'm a professional. So I'm going to have it in a professional environment, and then I'm going to lay out the market statistics and what's actually happening and see what you know about the process so that I have a basis for how to work with you moving forward.
That's right. And, you know, I think there are agents out there that are hesitant to have the conversation. And you look at those buyers that in 2020 were like, gosh, I'm on the fence. Maybe I won't buy. And, you know, the agent that didn't say to them, buy now while interest rates are under 3% or under 3.5% because they thought the prices might go lower, that did a disservice to that buyer, right? Not understanding the market, they lost out on opportunity. The same thing is going to happen with our buyers right now if we're unwilling to have the conversation about what comes next. So, you know, we go through market statistics, we talk about their timeline and their motivation. The number one determiner of when a buyer will buy a house is their timeline, not mine. So what I found is the buyer agents that run around and show a lot of properties, two things happen. Buyer loses faith in them. The more homes I show you, the less likely you believe I'm the agent that will find you the house. Right? So when we look through this and we have this motivation and timeline conversation, it's not a BS answer that's just all gobbledygook, right? The motivation and timeline is what determines if they're going to buy in 18 months or in 8 days. And I'm working with the people that are going to buy in the next 8 days. The 18-month people, I love them. I'm going to follow up with them. They're not unimportant because I'm going to be here for my career, not just a year.
Makes perfect sense. So now you've ascertained what they know about the market. You've educated them or validated them. Uh-huh. What happens next?
So then we go through timeline motivation. We talk about search criteria. We talk about how we're going to look at homes, how many homes we're going to look at. I'm setting the stage that we're not shopping. We're buying. We're going to go look and we're going to find a home and we're going to make an offer on it. And then we're signing an agreement. And so when we get to that piece of it, at that point, we've spent 45 minutes to 50, 55 minutes together. And those last few minutes, I'm looking at, we're going to sign this document and then we're going to set our next appointment. So the document being signed is simply our listing agreement for me to work with them and to be their advocate. We're going to sign a buyer agency agreement. And when we leave that meeting, I'm setting their very first showing. That could be immediately after the strategy session, or it could be within the next couple of days. But my goal at the end of every appointment is to set that next appointment to forward pace them.
I love that. So how do you discuss money?
So, I mean, it's a pretty easy question. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Buyer, do you know how I get paid? They say yes or no, or kind of. Most of them, it's kind of a maybe. And then we walk through it. Here are the three ways that I'm going to get paid. You went through it in Value Squared. It's the same thing. I've just been having that conversation, you know, since 2008.
So it's so unbelievable. It's such a simple question. Do you know how I get paid? I think you have a lot of people that are kind of like, they're like clenched inside, wrapped around the axle, trying to figure out how to have that discussion. When you ask it like that, it seems so organic.
Well, you had three top agents in Gary's Mastermind last week. Every person said that. That's all of us. Matt said it. Jess said it, right? That's the question. And it's not unusual to one of us. It is the people that have confidence in their skill and their value. They're not afraid to ask the question.
I love it. Okay, so now you get in and now they're ready to look at real estate. For all of my friends out there that are building large organizations that are using the showing assistant model, how did you get such a high closing ratio with the showing assistant model? Are there one or two or three things we need to know? What are the hacks?
Hacks are, it's really important who you hire. Whoever your showing partner is, or showing agent or field agent, I picked someone understanding that was my last piece of leverage. I think what happens right now is people look up and they're like, I'm tired of showing houses, so I'm going to get a showing agent. I didn't. I had closed 110 units the year before that I had shown all of myself. And so when we got to the 225 or whatever the next one was, I knew that that leverage piece was the relationship. So it had to be somebody that was like me, that was going to show houses similarly to how I show them. So the number one hack, you have to like the person that's the showing agent. As the agent, as the buyer agent, I had to want to spend time with them. My showing agents were closing 80 to 90 deals a year. I didn't have one buyer that was buying 80 to 90 properties a year. So my number one client was my showing partner. I had to know who they were, what they liked. I took them to dinner. I knew their families. I knew their pets. I knew everything about them because they were 80 to 90 transactions for me per year. Number one. Number two, you've got to have great administrative support, because if you bring in a showing partner and you don't have great administrative support, hello, hi, I'm the administrative support. Right? So you got to have great admin support. The third thing that I would say is take a chance on someone that's outside of industry. Every one of the showing partners that I've hired, and I've had long-term showing partners, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, people that have stayed. They were excited about the opportunity. They weren't worried about the split. So I was able to, because I had a predictable business with a predictable pipeline and I knew what my numbers were, I could pitch them a vision. I think sometimes when we try to take a current agent and make them into a showing partner, there's a little bit of a mental gap for them to get to see the vision instead of being so focused on the split.
I have one more question for you, Jen. Everything you've given me is pure gold. In our industry, for the longest time, it feels like people use the buyer's agent position as a stepping stone for something else. That's not how you thought about it.
No, I never looked at it like it was a less than role. Neither did Dan, right? When he hired me, there was this vision of that I was going to be a key player in his organization, that I was going to be a leader in his organization. So for me, it was never a stepping stone. We talked about it the other day. You know, people have asked me, they're like, how do I find a you? How do I find a buyer agent that's willing to do all of this? I think you have to be the kind of leader that people choose to be in your organization. So you can't find a me unless you show up like a Dan, someone that's going to make their world big enough for you to actually have a big world. And it's easy to say, it's pretty hard. I would imagine some days for him to be like, oh, she was my buyer's agent and I created this big world and hey, where is she? It can be a challenge, yet that's how you attract talent, is making sure that you, you know, reduce the number of friction points that there are.
He's a lucky man. Jen, I love it. We want to invite you to the lightning round. This is when we ask you a series of questions in quick succession. We want the first thing that comes to your mind. Will you play?
Yes, I'm in.
What is your favorite color?
Red.
What is your favorite song?
Eye of the Tiger.
Okay, stop the lightning round. It's so good. You don't celebrate the Rocky soundtracks enough, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think so either. And honestly, every person I'm friends with is going to be like, no, it's not. It's Dolly Parton's 9 to 5. But really, if I got to get myself going, it's
any Survivor song, but we'll take Eye of the Tiger. It's fantastic. And by the way, Frank Stallone is a fantastic artist in his own right. All right, back into lightning round. Okay. What's your favorite food?
Tacos.
Stop the lightning round. It's because it's so versatile. I mean,
anything you could have. It can be a breakfast taco. It could be for lunch. It could be for dinner. There's never the wrong time.
So do you classify a hot dog as a taco?
I guess I could. I've never thought of it that way.
Okay. By the way, every thinking person might. Back into the round.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite movie?
Oh, yeah. A Few Good Men.
It's a great movie. Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
Oof. Been a lot of great places. I just came back from Costa Rica. I loved Costa Rica. It was great.
Is there a book outside of MREA or anything that either Gary or Jay has written? You don't have to feel like it. And by the way, if you're new to the program, we say Gary a lot. I just want to remind everybody, that's Gary Keller and Jay Papazan and Dave Jenks, may you rest in peace, who wrote the book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, which is, of course, the namesake for our show. Jen, do you have a book that you think everyone should read?
I loved the book Chase the Lion. It's written by Mark Batterson, and it talks a lot about your purpose and the journey you're on and the mission. And there's a line in there that sticks with me, and it says something like, it's very hard to be famous in your own home if you're never there. And it was a perspective shift for me during the time that we've been talking about in production, when I was, you know, kind of running and gunning and doing all those things. And it was kind of like that gut check of, am I doing the most important work?
I love it. And by the way, we dig this sentiment so deep in the Kimber McKeedy episode. I would urge you, if you haven't listened to Kimber's show that we did, go listen and hear about this life balance and her journey to find it, similar to what Jen just said. It's absolutely inspiring. Jen, you inspire me. I think you are amazingly powerful. I'm so grateful to have you in my life. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate you.
Did you hear what she said? She said, we're not shopping, we're buying. We're not shopping, we're buying? Yes. Do you know how many real estate agents that I talk to that talk around that concept, but not directly to it? The fact of the matter is, and Jen would tell you, she's not trying to be a Pop-Tart. She's not trying to pop up and show a house. It isn't a shopping expedition for her. She is helping people make good decisions so that they buy real estate. You also heard her talk about the fact that being a buyer's agent is not a means to an end. She wasn't doing it so that she could earn the right to do another job, as happens on so many real estate teams, which is everyone looks up and says, one day I'm going to be a listing agent. Friends, I am here to tell you, buyer's agents are not less than in any way, shape, and form. Because if you really think about the marketplace, which one is more important? Is it having a listing and a seller that wants to sell, or having a buyer and a buyer that wants to buy? Friends, there's no point to have a listing if there isn't a buyer. And there's no point in having a buyer if there isn't a listing. Both sides offer equal value to the marketplace. And Jen Davis is proof that you can have a wildly fulfilling career helping people make the best decisions and buying the real estate of their dreams. And that is wildly inspiring to me. Go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com. Millionaireagentpodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.